Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. It's not just for contracting officers. If you work anywhere in the government acquisition world, this podcast is for you. Whether you work for government or industry, we're here to help you understand a little more about how the other side thinks. This episode is brought to you by Skyway Acquisition. Skyway helps you know more, do more, and win more in the government market. To learn more, visit skywayacq.com. Today's episode is the second in our series on the execution time zones. We cover the first execution time zone, the honeymoon zone, and the third and fourth zones in separate episodes. But today we introduce the performance zone.
So the performance zone, it's kind of like when the aircraft takes off and then it levels off at a cruising altitude. That's what you want from the performance zone. And, you know, because awarding the contract is one thing. You're getting the plane off the ground. You're doing all that crazy stuff. But performing.
Or winning the contract.
Or winning. Yeah, there you go. So both sides. But performing is, it's performance zone. It's a different thing. So the rest of the story is really what happens after a contract award. You know, what happens when we've left the acquisition time zones behind and we've actually through the honeymoon zone and now we're just performing. But the plane rarely levels off. I mean, there's turbulence. There's mechanical issues. You know, it's just
if both sides have done everything well, then you can get to cruising altitude, put it in autopilot, and then just hang out until it's time to land.
And sometimes
rarely happens.
Yeah, sometimes you have that baby in the back seat screaming the whole way, and it's just, you know,
medical emergency. There's a storm you have to route around. Something.
It's just a fun analogy.
All right, before we get into the performance zone, let's say thanks first.
So we have another iTunes review. This one's from Abe Henry. And thank you. It's a 5-star iTunes review. It says, this podcast is extremely informative and comprehensive. It says, I highly recommend it to all contracts managers. You can't get more simple than that. So thanks, Abe Henry, and thanks for the review.
Let me quickly recap the time zone. So the acquisition time zones are on the front end of the process. The requirement zone, the market research zone, the RFP zone, and the source selection zone. And there's a podcast for each of those to describe what we're talking about. The execution time zones are how you and I refer to the stages of the post-award process. After the contract is awarded, what happens? First, there's the honeymoon zone. Then there's the performance zone, which we're talking about today, the recompete zone, and the wrap-up zone. And there's a separate podcast for each of the execution zones. We usually have FAR time in our podcasts, and this is interesting because the FAR doesn't really talk so much about contract execution.
Yeah, there are 35 times in the FAR that the term contract performance comes up. It doesn't really define it, right? Now, the most interesting place I found it was in the definition of acquisition, and I'm not going to read the whole thing to you, but basically what it says is acquisition in the context of definition, it means everything from gee, I want something to, hey, we close out the contract. That's how they define it. So contract performance is buried in there. So it's no wonder that we kind of downplay it. It's not very glamorous, right? But in reality, the FAR Part 42 is called contract administration because it's a big deal. It's a big enough deal to have its own FAR part. And so rather than, you know, we'll have other podcasts about FAR Part 42. But really the understand that this is a big enough deal that you need to understand what is happening during the performance zone.
Right. So there's other episodes about the nuts and bolts of contract administration. This is big picture talking time zones. So what are we talking about? Performance zone. When does this happen? So the acquisition is over. We've awarded the contract. The honeymoon is over. We've had this contract kickoff. We've started to figure out, hey, here's what we proposed. Hey, here's what we thought we meant. What are we going to do? All right. So now everybody's ready. Let's go. Let's perform. And that performance needs to be on time, on budget, and it needs to meet the requirements of the contract. And of the contract itself, not of all the stuff that we talked about maybe in the contract during the pre-acquisition, during the acquisition phase, but now that it's awarded, what does that contract say? That's what has to be delivered.
And there's no grace for small businesses. We talk about the small business set-asides, you get a head start to compete on this stuff. But now that the contract's awarded, you don't have an advantage anymore. In fact, you may have a situation where you actually are going backwards a little bit because let's say your customer has gotten this contract as a large business award for the last, you know, umpteen years, and all of a sudden somebody set it aside for small business because everybody knew on the acquisition side that you could do it. Well, here's the person who's using the service. And they're like, well, who's this new small company? How do we know we can do it? And I've seen this before where the customer is not as
enraptured with the idea of a small business performing their work. They're really happy with the big guys.
Exactly. And sometimes there's a perception of a small business can't do this. And so keep in mind that not only do you not get any breaks after award, you may actually have a steeper hill
to climb.
There you go, steeper hill to climb. And so the idea is be aware that you may have to win over some customers that didn't have this as a small business set aside before. So you actually got the opposite of an advantage.
So we ran over the definition of the performance zone in our execution time zones overview episode. I'm going to recap that real quick. And we'll dive in a little more to the details. So performance zone starts at the end of the transition period. If the contract had a transition, if there was, hey, one contractor was performing this and now another contractor is going to performance, and for 60 days they're both going to be performing as one ramps down and one ramps up, well, when that period's over, yay, now we're in the performance zone. There might not have been a transition period. It may just be starting from scratch. We're doing something new. But after we get through that honeymoon, we're starting. The end of the performance zone is a little trickier because the next zone is the recompete zone. But the performance zone never really ends because as the recompete zone starts, you're still performing. The performance zone really runs the entire length of the contract, and it's overlapped on each end by the honeymoon and the recompete zones.
Yeah, and you could also make the statement that the recompete, if you're the incumbent, if you just won the contract, your past performance starts now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So technically, you're in the recompete zone already because you got to not screw it up and have the chance to win it again.
Yeah. It really, you do start recompeting on day one of performance because you're proving yourself. You're really not focused on it till the end. And that's when we'll talk about the recompete zone. But the performance zone, it's the majority of the entire arc of the execution zones. You're in the performance zone.
So what's really happening is the government, I, as the contracting officer, the program manager, the user, they just want to flip a switch and go, okay, we got a contract, let's go. And everything, flip the switch and the lights come on and everything just works.
And the industry side wants to make that light come on and then get paid. They want that money to be deposited in their account.
It sounds easy when you say it that way.
Yeah. And in between, that's when the turbulence happens.
Yeah. Now we get into situations where we have changes we have to make based on how the honeymoon zone went. We maybe have funding.
Why would we have to make changes based on how the honeymoon zone went?
We may have found things that we thought were going to happen. Here's one. We didn't have as much funding as we thought. So now we have to negotiate a little bit less work. Or things that we thought were clear in the RFP that were clear enough for the company to win, but they weren't crystal clear. And you learn so much when you're sitting down face to face afterwards. And now you're talking to real people and the definition of certain words may be different. And so I've had to write modifications to make sure that everybody in this company understood what this word meant. Because the proposal manager understood, I understood, but then during the kickoff meeting, they were like, oh, well, that's different. Yeah. Just because words mean things. So it's just, wow.
Mine. Yeah, and sometimes it's nothing that would require the contract or any of the parts of the contract to be modified. Sometimes it's just a different understanding that's going to impact the performance zone.
And then there's the requirements creep. One of the things that the definition of requirement, we'll do a whole other episode about requirements creep. The definition of requirements creep is after contract award, the people who are working on the contract, the vast majority of them probably haven't read the whole thing and they don't know what is the actual scope of the work. Like we're making this kind of widget and this kind of widget, but not this kind of widget. Well, the people on the floor, the people who are the users, they don't necessarily know that. And so every once in a while, because I've had – this is, again, a whole other topic. But every once in a while, you'll have somebody that creeps outside of the requirement, and you have two options. Either you got to figure out is it within scope and we got to add it, or go, hey, that's out of scope. We can't do that. And that's where the whole conversation comes from. And the other thing that is happening here a lot is negotiation. Contract administration in the performance zone is so much about negotiation and communication.
All kinds of little negotiations, like you wouldn't expect, you know, one big negotiation to get the contract awarded, but many, many, many little ones during performance.
And it's things like what day are we going to have the performance management review? The contract says you got to do it once a month. What day are we going to have it? Are we going to have it here? Are we going to have the contractor's facility? I mean, the contract already says you're going to do this. But where are they going to be delivered to?
Oh, yeah, but we didn't propose travel to actually come out to that place all the time. So if you want us to do the reviews at the government site, yeah, we're going to need to add some travel money, right?
See there, and it could, and this is a legitimate thing, because if the company that won the contract happened to be in Florida and the customer happens to be in Seattle, that's different. Because other companies may have, from like maybe a company that was actually local, bid on it, and that's what they thought, who they thought was going to win for whatever reason, so they didn't put that price in there. See, there's just so many examples of things that come up after a war that they're small negotiations. And so being able to communicate and understand the overall goal here is performance. We all want to flip on that switch. So let's all be heading in the right direction to make that switch, flip the light on, and everybody works.
Yep. And some could be big negotiations, and it's not all about creeping requirements. It could be new requirements that are actually in scope but not part of the price. So that they're close enough to what we want to do that they fit into this contract, but they weren't contemplated beforehand. So just think, if you're doing base operations and maintenance or facilities or whatever. So your job is to cut the grass and clean the buildings. Well, during the performance period, a new building gets built. It wasn't part of the original plan, but your job is to do all of the buildings on that site or in that area. So what do? You have to negotiate. You submit a proposal and you negotiate between the two sides for how much is it going to cost to do another building. And that's okay.
Yeah, and it could be a technology improvement where the technology that we were using to manage whatever this system is, the technology changed. This is going to be better. It's going to be cheaper in the long run for the government, but there's a cost to setting up this new software, which, again, I got a couple of examples of that. That cost is a negotiation. That is an in-scope change, because the contract was manage this system. Well, one of the things inside that system was the software. And so changing over that software there's labor costs, there's actual buying the software, there's all these little nuances. And so those can be huge, which could take months to negotiate, et cetera. But you didn't contemplate them 3 years ago when you awarded the contract.
So here's where we should talk about that. I'm going to continue on with your analogy of the aircraft leveling off on the trip, and then we set the autopilot. The performance zone can function just like autopilot if everything, and I mean everything, has been planned out and properly documented ahead of time. If you actually got everything right in the process, the performance zone could be pretty much hands off.
But
if you had a perfect weather forecast, you could plan a route that the autopilot could follow that would get you around all the storms. But the weather doesn't always cooperate with the forecast, right? So that's hard to do. If you knew exactly how many passengers were going to be on and exactly how much baggage they were going to bring, you could calculate the weight of the aircraft and exactly how much fuel you would need. But you don't know those things ahead of time. So I'm kind of stretching here, but I think the analogy stands in that it's rare that you actually are on autopilot for the entire performance zone. And if you're buying something complex that takes a long time to build or design, it can take a lot of people and time and money to administer the performance zone. I mean, think about it. The C-17 program, when that got started, when we were in those buildings, Kevin, they had a whole building full of people on the government side just to manage the acquisition, to manage the performance zone. And I'm not talking the factory where they built the C-17s or the buildings that it took the contractor to manage the contract or the building for the DCMA, the folks administering the contract at the contractor site. And that's for a contract that is planned out. Everything is planned out. There are requirements, but all of these unanticipated, all of the things you don't control can impact the performance zone. And the longer the performance zone is, the more chance you have of something like that happening. Like you have a 5-year contract and 3 years in, the administration changes over and the government decides, yeah, we don't want to do as much of that anymore. So suddenly your funding's cut. So now you have to negotiate, well, what can we still get for the money that we have?
And this is such a fun topic because there are people that can't stand this side of the contracts and then people that love it. I actually love it because it's puzzle management, contract administration, for all those things you just listed, it's full of unique puzzles to solve.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that do their whole career without really getting into the acquisition part. If you're on the government side, you may not do a lot of source selections. You may just administer contracts.
Yeah, which is, it's an art and a science, and it's a skill that takes a lot of doing it wrong to learn to do it well.
Yeah, I got to say, I went through a period of my career on the government side where I was the acquisition guy. And by acquisition, I mean before award. So I did lots of RFPs and source selections, and then ta-da, turn it over to somebody else. And they had to live with all the crap that I messed up during the acquisition phase.
You were the acquisition zone guy before it was
Exactly. I operated in the acquisition zones, and then it was time for the performance zone. I turned it over to somebody else, and I went on to the next acquisition. So I hope I got a little better at doing the acquisition part ahead of time, so those who inherited the programs that I awarded later on had less problems to deal with.
And this is a great example of how contracting officers bring different experience. Is that if you've only done contract admin, if you've only done acquisition, if you've only done a little bit of both, like I've done more source, I'm more like you, I've done more of the source selection side. Whereas like Shelley and Tim and Steve, they've done more of the contract admin side. So they know things that we just don't know, and likewise the other way. This function has so many nuances to it that it's very easy to assume that somebody is just going to know it. And without context, just like you talked about, you bought a satellite and you hand it to somebody and they're like, well, Paul, you forgot about this.
Oops.
You didn't have context. Now you do because they told you. So yeah. just how easy that was.
On the industry side, there's contract administrators that have never – actually written a proposal, created a proposal. All I may do is submit the proposal when it's done and then do administration. And there's whole teams of people from the BD side and the proposal management side that just over and over churn out proposals that never have to live with the performance of the proposals. One of our regular podcast guests is Wendy Freeman, who is a proposal manager, and she does not talk about contract administration. I think she actually said at the beginning that she had done the range of activities and decided that she just likes to do the proposal part. So Kevin, give me an example of one time when what happened during the acquisition time zones did not play out the way that you had planned during the performance zone.
What pops in my head is one of them that I was the source selection authority for during the acquisition time zones. And then I also was the contracting officer who was administering the contract. So I got to see the result of things that I wasn't really specifically clear on. And it had to do with travel. So what happened, this is one of those contracts where 99% of the stuff in there was firm fixed price, except for travel. Travel was cost. Well, then we realized that there were only going to be a couple of trips is what we thought. And then once we got to the performance zone, we realized that all of the customers that we had who were supposed to be in three locations, things had changed. And now they were in, it was like 17 locations. Again, this is one of those things happening outside of the contract that affected us. And it's a cost type contract. And I realized that this is the only item on this entire contract that's cost type. And it's causing, we've talked about it in other episodes, when you have a cost type CLIN, all of a sudden, poof, you have a cost type contract.
Right.
And so for like 1% of the obligations of the revenue on this contract was creating a whole lot of extra stuff for the small business. And I said, okay, well, what? It's travel. Let's just do it as firm fixed price. We know the 17 locations. Let's just kind of give an estimate, and we'll negotiate a fixed price for this travel. Yeah, that was it. We did it, but man, it was not as easy as I would have thought. And so, looking back, if we could have said, "Hey, customer, let's see if we can firm fixed price what these travel locations would be," we would have skipped all of the cost elements that drew into making the contract more complicated and saved us a lot of time. And so the lesson there was, number one, see if you can figure out how to fix price things that are commercially available. Travel, if you know the locations or if you know what the locations might be, they don't have to necessarily be cost type. And then the second lesson was expect to spend a lot of time negotiating things after award.
Yeah.
I thought travel, which because it's a small part, like I said, it's like 1% of the obligations, and it sucked up like 40% of my time for like a month trying to fix this one thing.
And if you lump it in, if 1% of the overall price has some variability that industry can't really control, most times I think they're willing to accept that, right? Hey, we're going to travel this much, and it's such a minuscule part of the overall effort. They can use that to play it off the other elements without having to come back to the government and ask for more money over and over again. Yeah, so much easier. So much easier. I hear what you're saying. For me, one of the things that often shows up in the performance zone that people didn't think of, and this is something that is a hot button for the government right now, is data rights. A lot of times the government isn't really clear on what data rights they expect on deliverables or what they actually want delivered as part of the contract. And contractors don't necessarily define that well in their proposals, especially if they're not asked. But a couple years later, during performance of the contract, the government says, hey, you've delivered this, or I want you to deliver some software. And the contract says, well, you didn't really ask for that. All right. Or even if you did, you don't actually have the rights to use that for other programs, government, because it's proprietary. So you have limited rights on that. That's not something you want to find out after you're in the performance zone. That's something that's best handled up front. And I think the government's become much more conscious of that. It's become a much bigger part of the RFPs that I've been a part of lately. Let's move on to the why is this important part of the podcast.
So contract administration, to me, the analogy I use, it's like prospecting in sales or like flossing in dental hygiene. It needs to happen, and the impact is over the long term, but it's not very exciting at the time. And really, to understand that your past performance, it starts now. There's a sales phrase that great service is the gateway to the next sale. Well, think in terms of great performance is the gateway to the next contract. So your past performance is already started. And so that understanding of that and how it can help you in so many areas inside the government market is huge, particularly when you consider that agencies talk to each other. They have CPARs and other systems, which they may or may not use. But the point is that your performance is documented. And so treat it like gold. And this zone is where you really need to be aware of that, because past performance, it's a bridge. I mean, it's a bridge to the next contract. It's a bridge to the next proposal. It's a bridge to you keeping this customer.
Specifically from the government side, the government side's looking at the performance zone and saying, did we get what we expected? Was it within our budget? Or you know, did it meet the contract price that we had anticipated if it's a cost type contract? Did we get it on time? And the hard part of it all is how do we know if we got what we expected? How do we measure that? Did we plan ahead of time for how are we going to test, or how are we going to prove out that this thing meets the requirements? And sometimes you find out that down the road, when you're trying to prove that it meets the requirements, that you didn't define how you were going to prove that well enough. And it becomes very difficult for either side to know if it actually met the requirements.
And then as the contract evolves and as things like technology improves and maybe you get more efficient, you have to negotiate. I have actually renegotiated service delivery summaries, or you know, oftentimes they're called service level agreements or performance metrics. I've actually negotiated them mid-contract because conditions have changed. They've gotten better at things.
Right.
And there's so many nuances to this that this stuff's, it's very rarely, but going back to your whole autopilot, it's very rarely touch it once and forget it. You're constantly tweaking this if you're doing it well.
So last thing for the government, you know, this is the longest phase of the acquisition, the performance zone. So you've done all your pre-acquisition stuff, you've awarded a contract. This is usually the longest phase when they're actually delivering what you asked to buy. And if you use that FAR definition of acquisition, you know, it's from the very beginning when you're building requirements to when you've actually got the product delivered that you expected. The industry side, why is this so important to industry? This is why the other time zones exist. This is why all the acquisition time zones exist, so you can get to performance. This is why the government built requirements, why they release an RFP, because they want to buy something. Now's your chance to deliver this. And it may be as simple as, we won this. They want these products delivered, so we're going to take them off a shelf in the warehouse, put them in a box, ship them to them. They're going to accept them and pay us. Performance done. But it could also take years and years, because you actually have to design something, test it, and then build multiple copies of it, like an aircraft.
And this is the part where you're actually starting to get revenue. Whereas before, you were investing.
Right.
And to be fair, this is why I want to take a slight tangent here. The government was doing the same thing. They were investing in the RFP. They were investing the time and the resources to build an RFP and run a source selection. Both sides were investing in the acquisition zones. Now in the execution zones, particularly in the performance zone, now they're reaping that investment. So the government customer is getting what they wanted. And in the industry side, now you're getting revenue.
Paid.
You better be making back more than it costs you to win.
Which is why you're in business. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the most important thing is that now you're delivering your product or your services and you're getting paid and you're going to be an ongoing concern. That's great.
It's government speak.
The side piece of it is the past performance that you already mentioned, Kevin. This is where you're building past performance. And like I said, it actually starts on day one of performance. Day one of performance, you're setting the stage for how the government perceives you. if you don't do a good job delivering what you're supposed to deliver, it can haunt you in the future because the government documents these things and uses that as part of their future acquisition decisions.
It's called the shadow of the past.
So to wrap this up, if you think about the time zones as slices of a pie, you know, whether it's an apple pie or a pizza pie, we've chopped it up into 8 slices. There's 4 on the acquisition time zones. There's 4 execution time zones. But they aren't equal slices. The performance zone is the largest slice of the pie. And it's true that for massive programs, requirements and market research, source selection can go on for a long time. Could be years. But if it takes that long to build the acquisition and do the source selection and select a winner, it's probably for a contract that also has a very long performance period.
We have a graphic of this inside the podcast slides, which are available for Skyway community members. So my main takeaway is that you want to stand out by focusing on performance. And you know, we kind of talked about past performance starts now, all that kind of stuff. But I mean, stand out. Make it really obvious to the customer that this part is important to you. And it should be for lots of different reasons. Which leads to my second takeaway, is that performance is a bridge to the next contract. So on the industry side, your past performance is going to is what's going to lead to more opportunity for you. But likewise, on the government side, contracts that run well allow you to get more done, allow you to serve your customer better, allow you to pay attention to what works well and do more of that. You hear me say that a lot, is that the things that I learned that made contracts run smoothly, I built future RFPs based on those principles. So pay attention to what's working well. So it's and the third takeaway is this idea of the goal is to have the plane level off and just be on autopilot.
So if you get everything right, the autopilot takes the plane from point A to point B. It's unlikely that'll happen, but you want to have to get off of autopilot as few times as possible during performance. Man, that was a stretched analogy.
I love it.
Takeaway for me, customer satisfaction is built and maintained during the performance zone. It's going to be very difficult to win new contracts. It's going to be very difficult to finish this contract if you're not building customer satisfaction along the way. There's too many examples of contractors being great at the winning part, great at writing the proposal and making promises, but failing to perform. That may be because the contractor had a plan of, we're going to win this, and then we're going to figure out how to actually make money and perform later. Or it may be an example of government requirements changing during the performance, which make it very difficult to perform as you plan during the proposal phase. But lots of programs get off track during this performance zone, not because of problems that were created, because of flaws in the previous zones, but because over time we start to drift. And it may be like we talked about before, government requirements change. The funding has changed. It may be because people decide they want something a little bit different. It may be because people decide they want something a lot different. It may be that this took so long that the requirement kind of went away. It's overcome by events now.
And so the performance zone is the tip of the iceberg. We'll have lots more podcasts about contract administration, but to understand that the basics of it, I hope we hit that in this episode.
So I'm going to go back to our silly analogy one more time. So if you've done everything right and the autopilot took you exactly to where you meant to be, now all you have to do is land the plane and wrap this thing up. And if you did it wrong, you may end up having to land somewhere that you didn't expect. And with that, I'll stop trying to somehow compare contract performance to autopilot and flying the plane. All right, I'll talk to you later, Kevin.
All right, see you, Paul.
Okay, that's it for this episode of the Contracting Officer Podcast. Be sure to check out the other execution time zone episodes, the honeymoon zone, the recompete zone, and the wrap-up zone. There's also an episode that gives you an introduction to all 4 of the execution time zones. Check us out in the Government Contracting Network group on Facebook, and remember, send me your topic ideas to paul@contractingofficerpodcast.com. Thanks for joining us.